it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast,
a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with The Bald-Faced Truth.
Coming up, Dave Softy Mahler. He'll join us from KJR Radio in Seattle. Pac-12 Conference has a big decision to make. That's coming up tomorrow. The Softy think about it. We'll get that news, but first, the 2 at 2. Two biggest things going on in sports.
The 2 at 2.
Losses. Losses everywhere. Financial losses. Ohio State saying it will lose $107 million. Because of the pandemic. University of Texas saying it will lose $162 million because of the pandemic. That is my first and foremost thing that I want to talk about in this segment. Money. We all know it rules the day. We all know it sets the table for a lot of decisions. But on the eve of the Pac-12 making its big decision, I think you have to frame part of this by money. About $50 million at stake for Oregon, Oregon State, and some others in the Pac-12 conference. It's why they have to play. It's why I think some of these teams will get ready to play on October 31st. I'm curious to see how the Pac-12 presidents and chancellors, though, will resolve sort of the discrepancy on who's going to be ready. Is it October 31st? Is it November 7th? I think you might see the conference split over this, and openly split for the first time, even though they'll say it's a unanimous decision. You might see some Pac-12 schools that are able to play. Arizona's, Colorado, Utah, possibly Washington, Washington State, Oregon, Oregon State may play on October 31st while the others take a bye on the front end of the season. Keep an eye on that. Second thing in my 2-2, Tyrod Taylor's lungs. Apparently, the Chargers team doctor accidentally punctured his own quarterback's lung before the game. He was trying to administer a painkilling injection into the cracked ribs of Tyrod Taylor. And instead, he popped the lung of Tyrod Taylor. Anthony Lynn has since come out. He says Justin Herbert will be his starter. By the way, little fact in the background, Justin Herbert, a pre-med biology major at Oregon. Why don't we let Justin Herbert administer the injections from now on with your Los Angeles Chargers? Judah Newby, can you think of anything more painful than a punctured lung punctured by a needle?
Having never experienced that, no, I don't think I can, other than the scratched eyeball you referenced earlier.
I was paper cut on your eyeball. Would that be worse? Yes, probably be worse. Now I can't get that image out of my mind. But that's your 2-2. It's the two biggest things going on in the world of sports. Softy from KJR in Seattle is going to be popping on here with us momentarily. I need to know what he thinks about the decision that's going down tomorrow. I'm upset at the Pac-12 conference. I'm on record with that. I feel like the leadership in the conference has been piss poor. If you got the effort and the execution that the Pac-12 conference leadership got, if that person was in charge of mowing your lawn, washing your car, if it were my teenager, in charge of doing chores, you would have had a talk with that person. I want to have a talk with the Pac-12 conference leadership. But first, Dave Softy Mahler, KJR in Seattle, friend of this show, and a guy with a hell of a view from his deck, I hear, off his place. Is it true? Do you have just an amazing view off your deck?
Well, right now I'm looking at Husky Stadium, the greatest setting in college football. We're doing our show here from UW today. We're getting the Jimmy Lake Coach's Show going tonight at 6 p.m. The Pac-12 may not have their act together, but we're tired of waiting, Johnny. We want to talk some Husky football. Jimmy's got to get on the air and start selling this program to whoever's going to listen. So I am literally inside Husky Stadium right now, overlooking, quite honestly, the most beautiful setting that I've ever laid these eyes upon.
I think the Pac-12 gets underrated. Like, it doesn't get its proper credit. I think, like, Tucson, Husky Stadium, Autzen Stadium, Reser Stadium, all great views off the back of the press box. Even Stanford and Berkeley, great views.
I think the best view in the Pac-12 is the west side of California's Memorial Stadium, where you can look out and you can see Alcatraz and you can see the Bay and you can see downtown San Francisco. The stupid thing is nobody sees it because that's the side the press box is on and there's a wall behind you. So if you can find a window to look through it and check out the Bay, you got one of the best views in football. But whoever built that stadium, man, they should have put the press box on the other side so the TV cameras could be there and show that view to everybody. It doesn't make any sense. And Reaser would be great if my buddy Scott Barnes could ever get that second half of that stadium finished. Is that going to happen in my lifetime, by the way?
He promised it on this radio show. He said there, I pressed him on it, and he promised it. And you know what? You were a big catalyst for that. You should take credit when it happens.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to take credit for everything that happens at Oregon State because it was my idea to hire Scott Barnes in the first place. So, no, I'm kidding. He's a phenomenal guy, dude. He was up here at Washington for a while with these guys. So I've known Scotty for a long time, and he's a great guy for that job, no question about it.
Let me ask you, what do you think is going to happen tomorrow? President's Chancellor's meeting, football will be decided upon. What happens, Softy?
Well, first of all, I was going to say, yeah, there's no way you had me on the air to talk about the views from all 12 Pac-12 football stadiums. So let's just get to it, baby. What I think happens tomorrow, they have to approve football. They have to approve a return to football because the alternative is I can't even comprehend it, John. I can't even comprehend a world where the Mountain West is going, the Big Ten, the SEC, the Big 12, the ACC, FCS in some schools, other FBS conferences, and the Pac-12 is the only decent-sized name conference not playing football. It would be absolutely suicide for these guys to not vote for a return to play in some form or fashion tomorrow. Now, here's the thing. You're seeing a lot of games canceled, obviously. A lot of games are getting postponed. Just because the presidents and chancellors tomorrow approve a return to play doesn't mean it's going to happen. We all know that, right? The virus could flare up. Games could get called off, and this whole thing could fall apart in October, if not early November. I get that. That's not what I'm asking for. What I'm asking for is a plan. What I'm asking for is a commitment to play football. What I'm asking for is a road back to return to play either late October or early November. If the virus doesn't allow that to happen, then so be it. But you have to have a plan. And so far, the Pac-12 has had no plan. They have ruined this thing at every step of the way. Their PR savvy is in the gutter. Every move they've made has been the wrong one. They're getting criticized right and left by everybody across the country. And I'll tell you what, man, the apathy that's being shown towards the Pac-12 from the East Coast, to me, is the most damning thing of all. You saw Jeff Schwartz's tweet last week. He said, look, people don't even care if the Pac-12 is playing football in 2020. And that's not just the East Coast. That's also people on the West Coast as well. Couldn't even care less if the Pac-12 goes. So the lack of passion, the lack of aggressiveness in getting this thing back in the mix, to me, has been mind-boggling. And I'll tell you what else. They have got to approve this tomorrow for one other simple reason. If they don't approve a return to football, what the hell did you cut that deal for with that company in San Diego? What was the point of cutting this deal and putting up millions of dollars for these testing machines if you're not going to play football? Hey, look, I get that you can test volleyball players, softball players, cross-country runners, golfers, soccer players. That's all great. That's all well and good. But let me tell you something, John. You know this as well as I. The Pac-12 and Larry Scott did not cut that deal with that company in San Diego to get softball and volleyball back on the field and back on the court. If you're not going to play football, what the hell was the point of that whole thing in the first place?
Utah, they've got high school football already going. The Utes could probably play tomorrow. You got Colorado, yeah. You got the Arizona schools, they're ready to go. What happens if this conference has to start with half of it starting on Halloween and the rest waiting a week? Does that look Mickey Mouse?
No, not at all, because I think at that point you're just going with the flow. I think at that point you are finding a way to make something out of nothing, right? There's no reason why fans should not give and the media should not give any conference a break if one team plays a certain number of games and another team plays another certain number of games. I mean, if there's ever a year where things are going to be out of whack a little bit, it's 2020. And look, the Pac-12 hasn't always had all 12 teams or all 10 teams open up on the same weekend. You know that as well as me. There's years, even recent history, where some teams have to wait until week two or week one after week zero to play football. So I think if six teams can go in week one, let them go. If the rest of the conference has to go in week two, let them go. If two or three teams in this conference either A, can't play football, or B, don't want to play football, sorry, you move on. There's no reason why Oregon, Washington, Oregon State, Wazoo, Arizona, ASU should be paying the price because Stanford is getting all moral and high and mighty about having football players on their campus when the general student population can't be there. So if that's the decision that they want to make, then great. It'll be the Pac-11 for 1 year. So what?
Softy, Dave Mueller, KJR Radio, Seattle. Dave, let me ask you, the Jimmy Lake, Washington, do you get a sense that Washington badly wants to be on the field?
1,000%. 1,000%. It would take me a half a second to answer that question. There is no question that Jimmy Lake wants to be on this football field. I'll tell you what, when the Pac-12 announced in August, whenever the hell it was, they were shutting things down until January. There are certain coaches around this conference, John, you know this as well as I, that took that as an opportunity to take 3 or 4 months off and do nothing. Jimmy Lake is not that guy. Jimmy Lake has had his guys in the weight room. He's had his guys watching film study online from home, Zoom calls, position meetings. They've done everything they were allowed to do in the last couple of months besides go out there and practice. So I think part of that is the Pac-12's fault, if not all of it is the Pac-12's fault, because when they made that announcement that things were getting shut down until January, I don't know about you, John, but there didn't seem to be a lot of wiggle room on that day when they had that webinar with Yogi Roth and Ashley Adamson and the rest of the Pac-12 doctors and, you know, Ray Anderson, everybody else who was on that call. There didn't seem to be a lot of wiggle room that day. It was, hey, we're shutting this thing down and we'll see you in 2021. So I can see how some coaches that day would have said, well, let's go ahead and just take some time off, go back to your family, focus on your studies. Go back home, be with your parents, and we'll see you in January. Other schools like Washington did not do that. So I think the Pac-12 and Larry Scott in particular really dropped the ball on that day. What they should have said is, hey, the plan for now is to play in January, but that could change at a moment's notice. So be ready. And that message was not sent at all.
Dave, Softy Mueller, KJR in Seattle. You're on in Eugene here as well as Portland. So you're speaking to the Duck fans that you love so much.
Yeah.
The Husky people. Fans, when that schedule came out, remember the first schedule came out, all the Husky fans were whining about Oregon getting a bye week in front of Washington.
Right.
Should we just have Washington and Oregon in week one so there's no crying on either side?
Yeah. How about we do this? How about we just have Washington, Oregon play 8 times and be done with it, right? I mean, honestly, if nobody else wants to be a part of this, why not just have UW and Oregon play 6 or 7 games and we can all just say the hell with it and move on? And, you know, it's funny that you bring that up, John, because I'll tell you what, I'm not trying to be a smartass here. I actually in some ways kind of feel bad. Well, not really, but it's a terrible situation for Duck fans to be in because I think Oregon is the biggest loser in this entire scenario. Because the Pac-12 had to delay the start, because the Pac-12 may not even play football, Oregon lost half their secondary. They lost Penei Sewell. I thought they were the best chance to make the Final Four. They were going to have Penei Sewell probably at minimum in New York at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and that's not going to happen. So all those great things that were coming Oregon's way, all those awesome experiences that were coming the Oregon Duck fans' way, they're not going to happen this year. I think Oregon is the biggest loser in this entire scenario without question.
I just think you like saying Oregon's the biggest loser. I think
Oregon is the biggest loser in this entire scenario without question. You're right. I do like saying that.
Softy, does the Pac-12's reputation kill its chances to get into the playoff? Meaning if one of these teams just emerges as great, you know, there's a little bit of a surprise and we look at them and go, gosh, that team might be a playoff team. Does the reputation of this conference kill it when it comes to the playoff?
Well, I'd like to say no, but I think we also know the history of the playoff committee. They're human, right? They have opinions. It's not like, dude, John, it's not like these people are a part of a jury and they're sequestered for 3 months watching college football, only focusing on what the court allows them to focus on. They read magazines. They jump online. All right, they read the newspaper, they hear talk radio shows, they're exposed to people's opinions. So the idea that they are absolutely 1,000% impartial right down the line, I don't buy that for a second. Not at all. These people see what's happening. They know the perception of the Pac-12. They know the perception of West Coast football. They know what this conference has done in bowl games. They know what this conference has done in the non-conference schedule the last 3 or 4 years. So I think there's absolutely a better chance today that the Pac-12 perception is going to hurt them when it comes to being selected for the Final Four. There is not a chance in hell that you can argue that they are better off in the minds of the committee today versus where they were 2 months ago. Zero chance of that happening. How big of a negative is it? I don't know, but it's a negative. We know that for sure.
Yeah, you lose a chance to make a statement if you're Oregon and Washington against Michigan. I know Oregon fans were upset at losing the game at home against Ohio State.
Right.
How upset were the Husky fans with not getting a shot at Jim Harbaugh?
Well, you know, this game was scheduled like 50 years ago, right, as most of these non-conference games are. You know, these things come out, you know, when you're born, for God's sake. So we've been waiting, it seems like forever, to see Michigan come back to Washington. They were here in the early 2000s, and they have a history of the great games in the Rose Bowl, for sure. I would say outside of any team in the Pac-12, the school that Washington has the biggest rivalry with is without doubt Michigan and the Wolverines because of all the big games they've played. Look, every game Michigan-Washington plays together is big. Either A, in a Rose Bowl, B, another bowl game, or C, a big-time giant non-conference showdown in September. So there's been games that don't mean squat with Oregon over the years. There's been games that don't mean squat with Oregon State. There's never been a game with Michigan that doesn't mean something, that didn't come along with a lot of hype. So not having that game, yeah, dude, was an absolute buzzkill for sure. Total downer.
You talked about Oregon being the biggest loser. Is there a winner in the Pac-12 that takes advantage of the fact that there's been a little more time here?
Yeah, well, I think schools like Washington, I, and again, I'm not saying this is going to make a major impact on their chances of winning a game in 2020, but Washington's got a brand-new head coach. They have a brand-new offensive coordinator. They have a brand-new offense, and they have a brand-new quarterback, okay? So, look, I'm sure Jimmy Lake and John Donovan would have loved to have had more time in spring ball and actual practices to get these guys going as a unit, and they couldn't do that. But now John Donovan and Kevin Thompson or Dylan Morris or Jacob Sermon, whoever the quarterback's going to be, has a little bit of extra time to kind of learn that playbook and learn the system and feel things out. So I think there is a potential silver lining there. There's no doubt about it. I also think a team like California, man, with Chase Garbers back at quarterback, any team that's got a returner upperclassman at quarterback who has experience is going to be, I think, put in a little bit of an advantage. So I think Cal may be better off. I think UW gets a bit of a break because they have more time now to get their system installed. But I just think for a team like Oregon, man, that was supposed to have a great shot at the Final Four, I don't know how you can argue they have the exact same percentage chance of getting there after all those guys took off.
All right, we're all expecting the decision tomorrow. Pac-12 leadership has been piss poor. We know that. Larry Scott, should this conference stick with the commissioner through the end of his contract? Do you blow him out and start looking, use an interim commissioner? What do you do?
Well, I just, like, why are we even having this conversation? I mean, this is, like, ridiculous. Like, do you wake up in the morning and bang a brick over your head? Of course you don't. Do you wake up in the morning and stick your head in the toilet? Of course you don't. I mean, the fact that we are even having this conversation of whether or not Larry Scott deserves to be the conference commissioner moving forward is insane. Look at the perception, John, of the Pac-12. And recruiting, in a lot of ways, is based on perception. The perception of this conference is in the toilet. Why in the world would you argue that Larry Scott deserves to stay on as the commissioner of this conference? He's the highest paid conference commissioner in all of college football. If I could get the Pac-12 CEOs and presidents and chancellors in one room, I would ask him why. What does Larry Scott bring to the table that justifies him being the highest paid commissioner in college football? There is no answer to that. Larry Scott was on our radio show 2 weeks ago, and we asked him about lobbying local politicians to get clearance for the players on all teams to start practicing. He said to us he thinks that responsibility falls on the schools in their local jurisdictions, to which I would ask, then why are you here? What are you doing if you're not going to go lobby local governments, if you're not going to call governors and mayors and county executives and find out, hey, what exactly do we have to do to get Oregon State, to get Wazoo, to get Utah, Colorado, UW, Oregon, whoever, back on the practice field, if that responsibility falls on the ADs and presidents on a local level, then what the hell are you even doing here? Why are we paying you as the highest paid commissioner in college football if you're going to sit back and allow that responsibility, which, by the way, would be pretty damn important as far as the list of jobs right now. If you're going to push that off on the local people and let the schools handle that, then what are you doing here? I just don't have any idea what this guy brings to the table that justifies his ridiculous salary. No idea.
Dave Softy Mueller, KJR, thank you. Mic drop.
All right, I need a bath after that. So, yeah.
There's Softy in Seattle. Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth. I'll take your reaction. 503-417-7575. There are just some radio shows that we have where it just kind of sails along. Every segment is good and interesting, and we're in one of those shows today. Should I be like a baseball player? Like, you know, you got a no-hitter going, you don't talk about it, or should I be walking around going, hey, we've been pretty good to this point? Anna has stepped into the studio. Don't screw this up now.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure, Anna. Bring it.
Did you hear Softy in the last segment? You probably heard his energy coming
out. I heard the energy. I didn't hear what he was saying.
I thought he was really good. He's excited. He's so excited about football being played. I find this amusing. That he's doing his show today from Husky Stadium.
Wow. An empty Husky Stadium.
Husky Stadium.
I love that.
But that's who he is.
That's great. He probably resonates with a lot of people that are so excited.
He's excited about tomorrow. And he's also, I think, setting himself up. He's like a kid on Christmas morning who's going, you know, talking about what he's going to get for Christmas before he's actually opened the presents. Pac-12 will decide tomorrow. Presidents and chancellors are meeting. There's some speculation that not all the teams are on the same page. Some want to begin playing on October 31st. Others are saying they're not ready. The prevailing opinion now, different than maybe a couple of days ago, is that some of the schools will play. Maybe six or eight of the schools will play on October 31st, and the ones that aren't ready will just have to wait.
Can we just take a step back and appreciate how nutty this is right now? When we have usually a college football season that is set in stone a full year before it even begins, like people's plane tickets are bought, the tickets are purchased, like people look forward to these games a full year in advance. And the fact that everybody has to be okay with this ambiguity right now is so flip-floppy.
It's weird because, you know, you may or may not know this, but we have season tickets to both Oregon and Oregon State, and both universities have reached out to their fans and said, what do you want to do with your tickets?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're having this conversation about what might be.
Right.
Like, okay, even if there are games, are they going to allow some fans in the stadium at some point of the season or none? Or so a lot of the fans, I didn't do this, but a lot of the fans have said, just fully donate my season ticket costs back to the athletic department.
Yeah.
Make it a donation. I didn't. I said, we'll take the credit and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Because you sat in the seats, I think, once.
Yeah.
But
they were great.
Yeah. But we normally just give them away. And people that are listening to the show get to go to the game. And I like to pick people who could never otherwise go to a game, who get to take their kids to a game or whatnot. But I just think everything is so ambiguous. I love the idea of the conference going, all right, Colorado and Utah are ready. You guys could play each other. Arizona State, Washington State, Oregon State are all ready. You guys play each other. I don't think Stanford, Cal, UCLA, or USC are going to be ready. I think it's going to be those four as the holdouts. He did not point out UCLA, and I think it was evident that Chip Kelly and UCLA are one of the schools that are not ready to play. Chip Kelly was in New Hampshire when the Pac-12 made their announcement about having rapid results testing, and, you know, USC and Stanford are in counties, Santa Clara County and Los Angeles County that were late to the party when it came to lifting restrictions. So I think that's all going on in the background. Let's go to the phone lines here. We got people who want to talk. Don is in Eugene. He's listening on Fox Sports Eugene, K-O-R-E. Don, what's on your mind?
Hey, John. Love your show.
Thank you.
What do you think about Urban Meyer for Pac-12 commissioner?
I want somebody with a better... I love the idea of... first of all, I think all like Power 5 conferences need a commissioner to oversee the Power 5. I would make Urban Meyer... I'd put him in that conversation. I don't like him as the Pac-12 guy because his background and experience, even though he's got a little taste at Utah, it was not with Utah as a Pac-12 member. I don't know what his understanding of the Pac-12 is. I think you need somebody who's got history. I think you need somebody gritty. I think you need somebody who's got big-time conference experience. One of the names that I have heard floated out there and I've heard talked about with people, and again, Larry Scott's still the commissioner, but let's talk about his replacement, is Bob Bowlesby, who has got some experience formerly with the Pac-12, was at Stanford, is, you know, the Big 12 commissioner. I think Bowlesby's got that grit and got that prestige and esteem. You got to get totally away from the suits when you make this hire, right? Most hires in corporations and with big sports teams are corrections. So Larry Scott, the anti-Larry Scott is what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody gritty. You're looking for somebody who doesn't necessarily need to fly first class, but could. And you're looking for somebody who isn't afraid to get their hands dirty, roll up their sleeves, and is viewed by the conference members as, you know, a hacker. So I would look at former athletic directors and current athletic directors inside the conference who have actually worked on campuses. And I look at a guy like Bob Bowlesby with the Big 12 conference. I think hiring is tricky. It's always corrections. It's like dating. You know, you ever dated somebody and then it doesn't work out? What do you do? Anna, what do?
You swing to the other end.
Yeah. You go from the guy who rides the motorcycle and looks like James Dean to, no, that didn't work. I need to go date an accountant.
It's like the driver's ed teacher telling you, okay, don't overcorrect. If you start to skid, don't overcorrect. But what are you inclined to do?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.